Coming to you live from the west side of the I Street Bridge, it's The Nate Darling Show.
Call me sir, goddammit.
With Jason Casey and Kareem Daniels. And now, trust him. He's a professional.
Pardon my French, but you're an asshole.
Here's Nate.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the first show of September. First one of September.
First one.
First new show of September.
First new show. Bam, we made it, everyone.
We had a classic episode on Labor Day. Hope everybody had a good one. We'll get into all that in just a bit. Coming up on the show today, selling meth is hard. Plus, there's a $50 steak sandwich that apparently people in Hollywood are very excited about.
How much?
$50.
Okay.
It's probably bloody, too.
And this may or may not be good news for you, but Moxie is safe. You don't have to worry. Moxie will not be going away.
Anyways.
And if you don't know what that is, we'll get into that in a little bit. If you're from the Northeast, you absolutely know what Moxie is.
Oh, I only know of it because of my travels.
Old-fashioned Moxie.
Yeah.
So we will get into all that in a little bit. But before we do, how was your Labor Day weekend, Kareem? I know you were going to see some college football.
It was great. No, I won't say great. It was Saturday was really great. One of the kids that I coached in flag football in the fifth and sixth grade, he is now playing for Butte College, which is where Aaron Rodgers went to school at.
For a minute, he did. Yes.
Yes, he did.
Where I went to school.
Yes.
Also.
You and Aaron Rodgers hung, did you?
Well, all the time.
You and him both got the same contract this past week?
No, we did not.
Oh, okay.
No, but we hung out all the time.
Mm.
And Larry Allen, who played tackle for the Dallas Cowboys Hall of Famer. So went to see him play his first college game, and he scored a 62-yard touchdown.
Nice.
So that was great. Sunday was not so great.
Oh,
I got
no.
to rest and do some work, and then my girlfriend decided to have her nieces spend the night. So that's a 12-year-old, a 14, and a 15-year-old.
Oh, a little slumber party.
Yeah. And we took them to Chalk It Up with us on Monday, which is usually our thing. Like, I really love going to Chalk It Up.
And if you're not from Sacramento, Chalk It Up is a big festival where people do chalk art on sidewalk around Fremont Park, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they do some great artwork out there. We had some assholes that don't know the rules of Chalk It Up.
Oh, no.
You know, so you get people impatient trying to skip through or jumping in the middle of the line in the middle of the sidewalk.
Right.
So, like, you can come in on either corner. That's...
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. That's...
Yeah.
I was just saying,
right,
you know.
Notification that we are absolutely correct about that.
Yeah. So you can come in on either corner. That's cool. We make room for you. Just jump in the line that way. But don't come across the middle, in the middle across, and then get in front of people and then go slow as fuck.
Mm. So line cutters?
Line cutters. Yeah. Not just like, look, if you cut line and you keep moving, cool. But don't cut line and then be the person that holds everybody else up.
Well, see, they cut the line because they only wanted to look at one frame.
Yeah.
And then they stand there. And it's like, dude.
Like, get the fuck out the way.
Yeah.
And I did take that time to go see the Black Klansman.
Oh, how was it? I want to see that.
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jason, what about you? How about your Labor Day?
On Saturday, so super excited Friday night, you know, right? We had Mexican food because it was Chris's mom's last night in town, so we went and got some Mexican food.
Where'd you get your Mexican food?
Not Carolina's or Carolina's.
No, not that. Not there.
No, we went to El Amigo, which is in East Sac, over by Cordy Brothers. It's like a little place, kind of, you would never know it's there.
I know where it is.
Oh, okay.
It's right on the corner of the building at the end of the strip mall.
Yep.
I drive by it when I go to Chipotle for my real Mexican food.
It's not real. It's not authentic.
It's authentic Chipotle.
Yeah, it's authentic Chipotle. So we got some food there. And then on Saturday,
Before you move on, I want to clarify for anyone who doesn't happen to speak Spanish, El Amigo is the friend.
Yep.
So Jason went to the friend to get Mexican food.
That's right.
Okay, then Saturday. I'm sorry. I just don't want anybody to fall behind.
Well, so that's where we went. That was Friday night. Then on Saturday we went to, so I had to wake up. So here's the thing. So I woke up at 4 o'clock, 4:10, to take my mother-in-law to the airport.
Okay.
And I decided, in my great wisdom, which was, I'm being facetious there if you don't catch the drift, I decided I'm going to play video games when I get back.
Sure.
Because I knew I would have 2 hours to play video games.
Yep.
Uninterrupted time.
I'm up and no one else is.
Yeah. And it's early in the morning, so I'm not going to fall asleep. Like I usually do when I'm trying to play games at 11 or 12.
Right.
So, like, everybody was out of the house. Like, I was in bed by 10:30, 11 o'clock the night before, so I had, like, 6 hours of sleep. I was on my way. Cut to 9 p.m. When I'm doing a show at the Comedy Spot.
Oh. ACL.
I thought that because I got, you know, 6 hours of sleep, that I would be fine.
Did you literally fall asleep on the back line?
No. But I definitely was very tired. And, like, somebody says, like, are you okay, man? And I'm like, I'm just really tired. I made a horrible decision. I didn't, like, I kind of let people know that it was, like, it's one of those times where I almost want, like, I'm almost willing to lie about my sobriety and say I was up partying last night too late and I'm hungover today. Because that's a way more acceptable excuse than, oh, well, I woke up at 4 and played video games for 2 hours while everybody was asleep.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I have been on the back line of Anti-Cooperation League and had moments that I do not recall.
Yeah.
I don't think I fell asleep. I just completely zoned out because I was really tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I find that best to do after you've done two scenes very close together, because you don't want to jump back in because you're going to look like a scene hog.
Yeah.
So then you just sort of turn your brain off and hang out in the back.
Right.
By the way, I just saw on Facebook a new Improv 101 class starting at the Sacramento Comedy Spot soon.
Always starting.
So there's your free plug, Brian. I also shared it on Facebook because, honestly, taking Improv 1, it was just Improv 1 then. It was before the Sacramento Comedy Spot was a big, hairy deal. It just had the big swinging balls, but it was not the big, hairy deal it is now.
No. We waxed back then.
Yeah, well, now it's the big swinging hairy balls. It was Improv 1. And there were people that I met in that class that, 11 years ago that are my friends to this day. And there were other people that I met in that class that I'm like, what's wrong with you? I will not divulge who was who. And I'm not saying that there is not overlap there.
Yeah.
But, if you get a chance to take an improv class, take it. And the drop-in ones are great. They really are. I love the drop-in improv classes.
But there's something about getting together with the same group of people.
Because you're in a group and you're getting through something together.
Yeah, I mean, and it's important.
And you're learning and growing.
And if you do it right, you could go through three or four of these people all the way through all of your classes there. If that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right up until the point where you and Brian have had enough of each other for a while and you don't go there for years at a time.
I don't think it really is that way so much anymore.
I don't know. Well, back in the day, it was really, for the most part, a one-man operation, and now it's actually really well-staffed.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, like, being a small business owner, I'm sure it has to be so tough, you know? Like,
at that point in time, he was a small business owner, and salute to you, Brian Krall, because you're living the dream. Brian used to talk about getting up at 4 in the morning.
Oh, my God, dude.
Motherfucker,
right?
Motherfucker had to get up that earlier every day to go and skycap at the Sacramento International Airport.
Yeah.
He was out in front of the Southwest Terminal.
I hung out with him nights, like, where he went straight to work. Like, yeah. He would stop drinking, like, after, like, the 10 p.m. show.
Sure.
And was like, I got to get to...
Yeah, I gotta get to work. So he would then go, he went and did that, and at some point was able to make the turn and make that business just what he did. And yeah. anybody who can do that really deserves a lot of respect. And no one does it alone.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody who does something like that has someone that helps them that you may or may not know about. But anybody who does that has just fucking stones. Because it's not like he has a trust fund behind him.
He talks, if you heard of like a, he talked about how when he just got in the, and I didn't know this because I'd left at this time, where he had to make a decision like to get his car repoed. And this is when they're in the new spot.
Right.
Within the first year. Get his car repoed or pay the rent on the comedy spot.
Right.
And he got his car repoed.
Well, clearly, because he's still in the spot, in the market.
So,
building.
I mean, like, that's the way it goes. I mean, like, that's just, there's a certain, I've met a lot of, theater.
It's the power of broke.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's a book by Damon Johns. It's called The Power of Broke. Yeah.
No, I'm
just go for it.
Yeah. So, take an improv class. And if you're not in Sacramento, there's probably an improv class somewhere, much like a microbrewery. They have popped up a lot in the last 10 years.
Yeah. It's just like the microbreweries actually.
Really? They both require a lot of drinking.
I don't drink anymore. Help. Back then I drink a lot.
I will tell you this. Even if you never want to perform on stage,
take
an improv class. It will help you at work. And if you're single, it will help you carry on conversations with people at bars. It will help you start conversations. It will help you carry through in meetings. It will help your mind pass the day. If you've got a job where you're like, I want to kill myself. I'm so bored doing this.
Yeah. I mean, it's really one of those things like, go do it because it's going to make your life better just for going and doing it. Like, really, it's one of those things where whatever the amount of money is, you know, maybe $300 is pushing it. But, you know, because of all the regions are different, like $150 to $250, probably one of the best investments on yourself you'll ever make. And it'll be so rewarding for it. Like, and there's a lot of people that take the classes just to get better at things. There's people that take it with the aspiration of wanting to become an actor or a comedian or getting something else out of it. And that's fine. But the people that I see that really get the most out of it are the people that were just looking for something to do and just did it. And then, like, you know, 5 years later, they're like, this is the best decision I ever made in my life.
Much like improv itself, just go in with an open mind and react to what's happening. And take it from there. I was guilty of this myself where I'm like, oh, I see this. I want to do this. And sometimes you get way too ambitious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't let things come to you in the way that they should. And, you know, then, you know, you can be a pain in the ass or you'll be unhappy or whatever. Something will happen. And if you can just sort of go with the flow and let stuff happen. I think that's probably the best advice I can give anybody, no matter where you're doing it.
And it'll help you. Doing that will help you learn how to do that.
And because improv is yes and, it will help you get along with idiots.
It's just a great. It'll definitely help you deal with idiots, for sure.
Yes, and. My Labor Day weekend, speaking of dealing with, no, I didn't deal with a lot of idiots. I learned how to ride a motorcycle.
All right.
Call him Easy.
Finished up the CHP. It's out at Safetyville. Did the motorcycle safety training course.
Oh, they do that out there?
Mm-hmm. On Bradshaw Road. And
oh, no, I took DUI classes there.
they have a lot of classes there.
Yeah.
Right out in the parking lot, they've got a whole motorcycle course that they set up, and it's Thursday night. All day Saturday. So we rode all morning on Saturday. And then we had to get there, Saturday and Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m.
Ooh.
And we rode from 7 until noon, which sounds like it sucks until you get off the motorcycle at noon and you see all of these other people who are coming for the afternoon class and it's already like 95 and it's hot.
Yeah.
They're like, all right. So Saturday, 5 hours on the bike, a lot of new riders, including myself. Some had never been on any, clearly had never been on any mechanized transport ever. Everybody got better throughout the day though, so it was nice. And then you went back in Saturday afternoon, had about 3 hours of class, and then you had to pass a written test.
Hmm.
Yay. And then Sunday morning, get there again at 6:30, on the bikes at 7, ride until about 11, 11:30, and then we had our skills test. And then we were, you passed or you failed. We were done. But I went from never having even sat on a motorcycle to being able to start, run, ride, and safely operate a motorcycle in 3 days.
Wow. Cool.
Which, the course was great. The instructors, oh my God. They were the most patient people with everyone. Patient, encouraging, the type of person you strive to be. They were all that in this context. Now, I can't swear that they're not total nightmares outside and away from a motorcycle. But in dealing with them in this setting, they were all really, really fantastic in terms of, you know, because I don't know that I would have the patience for some of the people that were out there and some of the things they were doing. And they don't put up with any nonsense either. So no one was, like, fucking around. There was none of that. Everybody was paying attention, although anytime there was a break, the African American women in the group were on their phones talking to someone. I don't know what that was about. I don't know.
Were they together?
No, they were not. They were not together, but they did, sit together during all the breaks and talk. Well, I don't blame them.
Yeah.
But it was just really interesting, and one way more than the other. There was one, she had the cell phone hanging out of the back pocket of her jeans, and as soon as they're like, it's going to be a 15-minute break, helmet would be off, cell phone would be up to her face, and she'd be talking to somebody. I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, that's funny.
So motorcycle was good. And then Monday, we drove up to Reno so my father-in-law could place his NFL bets. That's right, Kareem. Labor Day Monday, we got up in the morning and drove to Reno.
Holy shit, Batman.
We got up there, had breakfast, placed our bets, did a little gambling, or as I call it, just throwing money into the fire. And then about 1 o'clock, we got back in the car and headed back to Sacramento.
How long did it take you to get back?
We got back at 4:30, 3.5 hours.
Okay.
It took us a little under 2 hours to get there and a little more than 3.5 to get back.
Wow.
Remember, it's downhill coming back.
Yeah, I know, but I just was thinking about all the people that were coming back.
Yeah.
Well, sure. You had the holiday weekend.
Yeah.
Burning Man ended.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And there was a forest fire in Emigrant Gap, and they were evacuating people from campgrounds.
Yeah.
We actually, right around Truckee, got off the freeway and took some back roads, because Waze told us to take the back roads, because those were going about 25 miles an hour, and the freeway was going 6.
Oh, I believe that.
But, yeah, it still ended up taking us.
If you can get to the 49, like.
No, they got off, and you took the 20, didn't you?
No, we were literally on, like, Donner Pass Road.
Yeah.
Huh. We were weaving through shit. Yeah. But at a certain point, once you get further, like, should we go this way? And I'm like, no, Waze is saying get back on the freeway here. Well, the reason Waze was saying get back on the freeway there is because all of the surface roads at that point were going, like, 8 miles an hour because of all the evacuations from that fire.
Yeah.
Because I looked out, I go, hey, something's on fire out there. Turns out, yes, it's called the North Fire, and, it's going. But I knew going to Reno on Labor Day, coming back at the end of a weekend, you know, I wasn't stressed because I knew it was going to be, I thought it was going to take 4 hours.
Yeah.
I budgeted for 4. 2, my wife was driving.
Okay.
3, we had the new Chevy Volt, yes, which, by the way, brakes for you and will keep you in the lane. So it's not as stressful as what the normal drive that you think.
Yeah.
It makes it so much less stressful.
Yeah.
That the adaptive cruise control, my God.
Yeah.
My literally everyone should have this.
Huh.
It will A, it will be safer for everybody, but B, it is just so much less stressful to drive.
Okay.
When you got that. Yeah. Because we're driving along and all of a sudden it starts braking and I look over and her feet are nowhere near the pedals.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you really trust that? And she goes, yeah, I use it every day. I know it's, as long as you have that on, man, it will stop.
And I was up that way last week, Tuesday to Thursday, because we did our claims conference up there.
Right.
And there was an earthquake the day I left. I'm glad I left when I did. But I asked one of the speakers who was still up there after the fact, and he didn't. He said he didn't feel it. So they had a dinner, and they had a dinner on top of the mountain, where they had to take the air tram up to get up there, and they said it was going to be 40 degrees. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
You missed out on all the fun.
But I was going to go on the tram the next day. I thought about going up there to take pictures.
Right.
And I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been on top of the mountain or on that tram when the earthquake hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might not have felt it. You don't know.
Yeah.
So that was Labor Day weekend. pretty uneventful, I would say, overall.
That was great.
Some big news, though. Roseanne is leaving the country. Aww. She's had enough.
Yes. Oh.
That's too bad for the other country.
It really is. So she went and talked with the Rabbi Shmuley. Oh, of course. As soon as I started, it refreshes. She went to talk to the Rabbi Shmuley to explain her situation to him and what was going on. See if you can spot the stuff that's kind of bullshit in this whole statement. All right, are you actually going to play? There we go.
You went beyond almost any celebrity in America in apologizing, taking full responsibility.
I was
showing...
the only one that apologized, and
you're right.
My friend.
You're right.
Me
you're,
at the beginning.
You know, you're the only.
No, none of that is right. Absolutely not. The we're going to start right off. None of that is right. It was not really an apology. It was a half-ass apology. She's far from the only person who's ever apologized.
Yeah.
I mean,
even the computer agrees with you.
The computer agrees that she's far from the only one. But obviously, Rabbi Shmuley loves to stroke Roseanne's ego.
Don't,
exactly.
You certainly are.
My friend told me at the beginning, they said, oh my God, you've made a fatal mistake, and it's all over YouTube. A lot of people are saying it. They said, you made a fatal mistake, and that is you apologized to the left.
Okay, she just went Trump. A lot of people are saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you did this. A lot of people are saying it. No, they're not.
Yeah. Like what, the 300 or 400 or the million? Like, I mean, tell me.
A lot of people are saying it. And then she did the thing that I automatically disqualify anybody from reasonable discourse with. They say something like the people on the left or the people on the right. I don't care which side you're on. You start just going the people on the left, the people on the right. Fuck you. Because you've already closed off your mind to whatever might be going on. You've got your viewpoint, and you're driving it home, and you've got your preconceived notions about everything else.
And once you apologize to them, they never forgive. They just try to beat you down until you don't exist.
Or you can actually acknowledge what you did and not then follow it up with more, essentially racist insults. I understand she's got multiple personalities, but just stop.
That's how they do things. They don't accept apologies. Because I was the only one who apologized. And I think
And you apologize. You apologize with heartfelt tears and sincerity. It wasn't just an apology. You apologize with all your heart and all your...
No, she didn't. She felt like she was being persecuted, and that's what she was crying about. They're not being fair to me.
Your being.
I did.
So Roseanne, you're not gonna, you don't plan to watch the revised version of
you
that show.
You know what? I have an opportunity to go to Israel for a few months and study with my favorite teachers over there, and that's where I'm gonna go and probably, move somewhere there and study with my favorite teachers. I have saved a few pennies, and I'm so lucky that I can go and go to any mikvah I want to go to at the right time of night and study with any rabbi who, you know, I can ask to teach me. And it's my great, great joy and privilege to be a Jewish woman.
She can go to Israel and be with all the other races over there.
It is her privilege and everything else to be a Jewish woman. So good luck, Roseanne.
Have a good time.
Yeah, have a great time. TMZ, of course, caught up with her at LAX, and here's what she had to say. She's getting out of the back of an SUV.
Roseanne, I love you. What? I love you.
Well, you're smart, then.
What inspired the move to Israel?
God bless you for being honest, wonderful, and entertaining.
You're sweet.
Because you are.
I'll give you an XL.
What inspired you to move to Israel?
I love it there.
How long do you plan on staying?
Until hell freezes over.
Do you think we can find a peaceful solution to the violence?
I will.
You will? You're going to bring peace to the region?
Yes.
Beautiful.
I don't know who's more ridiculous in that scenario.
The guy that was congratulating her.
The guy who was screaming idiotic questions, like, "Are you going to bring peace to the region?" Yes, I will.
Oh man!
So good luck, Roseanne, as she heads off to Israel.
Good for her.
Yeah.
I hope she enjoys it.
I hope she finds happiness and enlightenment.
That's it.
Nothing but the best for her.
Yeah.
And her future endeavors. All right. Somebody who's got,
She could eat a whole bag of dicks.
She could eat a whole bag of dicks.
I mean, if she wanted to.
Circumcised, because it's Israel. No foreskin for her. Not in Israel.
Nope.
All right. Speaking of eating a bag of dicks, a Republican official in Pennsylvania has had to resign after she went full racist. She referred to black NFL players who kneel during the national anthem as baboons. Former Beaver County Republican Committee Secretary Carla Maloney resigned on Friday in a letter to the committee's chairman. She apologized for her insensitive posts and said she would work to show everyone who she really was.
Yeah, she already did, though.
Exactly.
Carla, we've already seen who you really are. Maloney called the players baboons on her personal Facebook account in a post written in response to athletes who have knelt during the national anthem to protest against social injustice and police violence. In another post, she said, quote, "Overpaid, ignorant blacks should," and I quote again, "go to Africa." The Beaver County Republican Committee said in a statement that it had accepted Maloney's resignation and denounced her comments. She could not be reached for further comment. By the way, the NFL regular season kicks off tomorrow. We will be addressing Colin Kaepernick, and
she is in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah.
Well, the part where she is, she thinks the North lost the Battle of Gettysburg.
Right.
We will be talking about Colin Kaepernick and the Nike ad and the response to all that on Friday's episode of the show. So you're going to have to wait for our hot takes about people burning their Nike shoes. I deeply apologize. I don't. You can wait. There are plenty of other people who have hot takes about it. But we're going to hold off for a little bit. Meanwhile, speaking of racists and people who hate, Steve Bannon.
Oh yeah.
The New Yorker had invited him to the New Yorker Festival. Well, now they've not.
Oh no, really?
Right. The New Yorker invited Steve Bannon to essentially headline the New Yorker Festival, and then people went, "What the fuck?" And the New Yorker then went, "Oh yeah, about that. Never mind.
Get the fuck
out. You're not invited anymore."
You're joking, right?
I am not. I am absolutely not.
Wait. Why would who at the fucking New Yorker thought that was a good idea?
Unclear.
I wonder if what if it was just them trolling? Like, what if it was just some guy at the New Yorker who was just trolling them? Like, he was just like, "I'm going to put this out there, and it's going to get by, and then like we're gonna get people that are gonna quit that aren't gonna go, and then we can just uninvite him, and it can be so horrible. It's
here's what I think happened, because the New York Times tweeted on September 3rd, Stephen Bannon will headline the New Yorker Festival, where he will be interviewed by David Remnick, the magazine's editor. Here's my guess. They said, you know what we should do? We'll get Steve Bannon here, and we'll have you interview him, David. And you're so much clever and smarter than Steve Bannon, you'll make him look like the racist boob he is.
That's quite possible. I didn't realize he was going to be interviewed by it, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Which is always a terrible idea.
No. Stop giving these people a platform.
Exactly. Judd Apatow said, if Steve Bannon is at the New Yorker Festival, I'm out. I will not take part in an event that normalizes hate. I hope the New Yorker will do the right thing and cancel the Steve Bannon event. They should read their own reporting about his ideology. John Mulaney said, I'm out. I genuinely support public intellectual debate and have paid to see people speak with whom I strongly disagree. But this isn't James Baldwin versus William F. Buckley. This is P.T. Barnum level horse shit. And it was announced on a weekend just before tickets went on sale.
I was sitting here thinking I'm going to cancel my subscription. I'm like dead serious.
Jim Carrey, who is scheduled to be at the New Yorker Festival, tweeted, Bannon and me on the same program? Could never happen. Patton Oswalt said, I'm out. Sorry, New Yorker. See if Milo Yiannopoulos is free. Jimmy Fallon simply tweeted, I'm out.
He's not going to step near that.
Jimmy fucking Fallon took a stand on you.
So, look.
He takes a stand on nothing.
I don't know how many times I have to say this. News media, news magazines, stop chasing these fucking people. You're going to lose the people that support you if you keep chasing these goddamn people.
And then you will be the failing New Yorker.
And then you will be the failing New Yorker.
$59, by the way, to see Steve Bannon talk with David Remnick. That's what they wanted. They called it the ideology of Trumpism.
Yes. Stop chasing these people. Same. Look, you're going to learn what the Democratic Party is learning right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if you're going to chase these people, you're going to lose the people that will support you. And then you're going to get people in that are actually... So you got to, you're going to start getting people, the Democratic people in the Democratic Party want Democratic people at this point in time. They want people that represent them. If you keep chasing this middle group of people, you are going to lose your people. Like I am seriously sitting here thinking about canceling my subscription. Mm-hmm. And by the time I get home, maybe I'll calm down enough to not do it. But I'm on the point right now.
David Remnick then wrote a note, same day, by the way, to New Yorker staff, said, quote, I don't want well-meaning readers and staff members to think I've ignored their concerns. I've thought this through and talked to colleagues, and I've reconsidered. I've changed my mind. There is a better way to do this. That was followed by, our writers have interviewed Steve Bannon for the New Yorker before, and if the opportunity presents itself, I'll interview him in a more traditionally journalistic setting, as we first discussed, and not on stage. Or don't. Or just don't.
No. Yeah. David Remnick, you are really making me consider whether I want to keep my subscription to the New Yorker.
Mm-hmm. Do you like the comics enough to deal with it?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
And I don't know who Wajahat Ali is, but he has a blue check mark, and he is correct when he tweets, a win for Steve Bannon regardless.
Yeah.
Because his name came up, and now, because it's not going to happen, they didn't have the guts to face Steve Bannon.
Exactly.
They didn't have the courage to debate him live. They couldn't, their weak ideas couldn't stand up to his strong ideas. And by the way, it frames it in a, and that then frames it in a way
yeah.
that the press is taking a side.
Exactly.
You already fell for it. You've already fallen in. The Venus flytrap is slowly digesting you.
They are the football coach that thinks, oh, he was a draft pick. I can make him a star. That's what they are.
Bannon to the New York Times. The reason for my acceptance was simple. I would be facing one of the most fearless journalists of his generation. And what I would call a defining moment, David Remnick showed me he was gutless when confronted by the howling online mob. And there it is.
Yep.
There it is. And New Yorker, by the time anyone hears this, you may have lost a subscriber.
Yes, you will.
Unfortunate. All right, let's move on to smarter people. An Indiana man who poured a bag of flour over the head of a 68-year-old woman shopping at Walmart was arrested yesterday for the attack, video of which the man streamed live online. By the way, if you are not part of the Jackass crew, I mean, here's the thing. Even the Jackass crew didn't do this to people who weren't in the Jackass crew.
Yeah.
Jackass. Investigators charged that Philip Leon Weaver, 22, snuck up behind the victim last Wednesday morning as she was shopping for her grandchildren. "It's going down," he announced as he broadcast via Facebook Live. After dousing the woman, Weaver tossed the 5-pound bag of flour and fled the Walmart in an Indianapolis suburb. He subsequently posted the video of the sneak attack along with the caption, "Pouring flour on lady's head." What a dumbass. He had previously filmed pranks in the store. He was arrested Thursday and is facing criminal mischief, battery, and theft charges. He was also hit with a separate gun theft count. While the elderly victim was not injured in the attack, she was upset and crying while being interviewed by police. There he is, Kareem. He looks like he's one of yours. Hold on, let me get that up there for you to see. You know what? If there's a drop, he's one of yours. And I think there is.
He looks like Jason with dreadlocks.
He does. He could be Samoan. He's being held in the Marion County Jail on the felony and misdemeanor charges. He has posted prior film Walmart pranks to his Instagram page, which I won't tell you the handle of, and on Facebook where he has reported, "I've been high for 5 years straight." Oh, he is Jason with dreadlocks.
Get the fuck out of here.
He should go to jail for doing dumb white people shit.
Right. All right, let's hold on. I get this. Let's see. This is from his.
I'm going to laugh. I don't want to.
That's because you're terrible. Okay, there he is. No.
That's not. There's nothing.
He snuck up behind an old lady who had her head down looking into her cart, and he dumped. I guess attack. He opened a bag of flour and dumped it softly onto her head.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was just stupid.
It was just a high guy doing something that he thought was funny.
I will have to say this right. Like, this is just, there's nothing. Like, the fact that I'm even reading an article about this is just stupid in the first place.
Well, it's on the smoking gun.
I mean, just fucking ridiculous. Like, have you seen the hot dog prank?
No.
Oh, that was funny. Because they're just going around and they're just putting hot dogs in guys, women in guys' pants, and sometimes in their hoods. And they don't even know it sometimes. But it's pretty ridiculous. My wife's the one that showed that to me and thought that was hilarious. And she doesn't smoke marijuana, so. So it's not just some high guy shit.
That's what you think.
Right? Secondhand. All right. So meanwhile, we talked about this at the beginning of the show. Coca-Cola has acquired a taste for Moxie, which is a beloved drink in Maine, but not actually made there. By the way, Moxie, old-fashioned Moxie, is getting sold to Coca-Cola, but it isn't going anywhere. That should please fans of the unusual soft drink, which has a strong connection to Maine. Ownership is transferring from a New Hampshire Coca-Cola bottler to Coca-Cola itself. They said in a statement that Moxie will continue to be made in Londonderry, New Hampshire, near its market base of northern New England. The company said it wants to make sure, Moxie stays true to its northeastern roots and that it has no immediate plans to change the distribution footprint. I could have sworn I've seen it at the Walmart out here in West Sac, though. If I had more time, I would have gone to get some so we could have a taste test.
Yeah.
Have either of you tasted it?
I have. No.
Yeah. I was not a fan.
I tasted it, but I was a kid. I was like 8 or 9, and the bright orange label made me go, oh, that's interesting. And my dad's like, you don't want that. Yeah. And I said, no, I don't. No, I do. And he goes, well, you're going to have to drink it. And I said, that no problem. And I took one sip and I was just like, it was like, it couldn't have been more upsetting if I would have literally taken a handful of dirt and thrown it in my mouth.
That would have been your, should have been your clue when your dad's like, yeah, go ahead, drink it. Like, no.
No. That's not what he said. He said, if we get it for you, you have to drink it.
Yeah, that should have been your clue.
Yeah, well, I was 8.
Yeah. You've only heard that 30 or 40 times by that point, right?
By the way,
you haven't learned what it means.
here's a newsflash for you. 8-year-olds are stupid. Yeah. All 8-year-olds are stupid. They don't know shit.
Yeah. That is true.
It's not their fault. They're 8. You shouldn't expect them to know anything.
I remember I had a very distinct taste and not one that I cared for. I just remember I was like, oh, that's, I'm glad I got this, not.
Does it taste like Tab or RC Cola?
Oh, no, not that good.
No,
oh, damn. Yeah.
Not that good. I can't even.
It doesn't taste like cola.
It tastes like chewing a root.
Yeah.
Bitter root would be the best description I would have for it. It is a bitter drink. Fans don't seem worried about the sale given that it's a gentian root formula, won't change, and it's still going to be bottled in New Hampshire. The explanation that Coke is purchasing the name, but there's a guarantee Moxie will continue in name and taste, said a relieved Gary Crocker, a Maine humorist and self-described lifetime member of the New England Moxie Congress. Like its new corporate owner, Moxie was initially marketed as a cure-all. Beginning in 1885, it was cooked up by a Lowell, Mass. Doctor, but it never really caught on outside of New England. The name came, according to the official history, the name came from a Lieutenant Moxie who discovered the root in South America, although the company has since admitted that it was part of a marketing fiction created to promote the drink.
Oh, so it's that stuff that my grandma used to make from the weeds to get rid of your cold.
Maybe. It is an acquired taste. I'm wondering, because if you would have given an 8-year-old me black coffee, I would have had the exact same reaction, and I drink coffee and like it.
Yeah.
So I do want to try it again, but what I want to do is get like a 12-ounce can and split it between the three of us.
Yeah, no, I'll try it again under a different circumstance where I know what to expect.
Roughly what you're getting into.
Yeah, but when you don't know what you're getting.
If you think you're opening a can of soda and you're going to get that sweet, sweet nectar of like a Coke or a Pepsi.
It's not, there's nothing.
Or
there's
an RC.
Or even just like a soda. Like it's the sweetness.
Or like a Shasta Cola.
Yeah, it was not a cola at all. Even though it looks like it might be a cola. And because it's like 1885 special, like it hits all the points that a cola, like, cola drinks were designed to replicate this. Like, that's the thing that you don't get necessarily. Like,
right.
Like, because this was like, and all those things were originally sold on the backs of traveling, salesmen, you know, selling their spirits and, you know.
And Coke.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what it was. It was topicals and solutions and.
So, good. For you, the Moxie is.
I wonder if, like, the guy that created Coca-Cola, like, is like, yes, I finally did it! Like, I finally conquered Moxie! Like, and, like, the Moxie, like, the guy that founded Moxie just, like, rolling over in his grave and just, like, I can't believe Coca-Cola is buying us.
And the guy who founded RC is like, beat you both, bitches. By the way, if you're curious about trying Moxie and you don't see it on your local shelves, you can, in fact, get it through the Shop Amazon tab at NateDarlingShow.com.
Boom.
That's right. Try old-fashioned Moxie or literally anything you might like. Have it shipped right to your door through that Shop Amazon tab at NateDarlingShow.com. We do appreciate it. Little better last month, still not great. You're not clicking through enough.
Mm.
Make it so.
I bought shoes through it. No. Did I? No, because you can't. No, actually, I did. Because you can't buy them. You can't, if you buy it from your phone or your iPad, you can't go through the tab.
You actually can. You go through your mobile browser, you hit it, and it will then open up your Amazon app.
Oh, okay.
So you can in fact do that.
I will do that next time.
What I would recommend somebody, I mean, like, if Moxie isn't your thing if you were to go on there and get Fentimans, natural soda, Curiosity Cola. Now that right there is an amazing cola because it has like, these, it's amazing. It's like, it was like what I was hoping Moxie was going to taste like.
I see.
Yeah. So anyhow, you can get that on Amazon also.
Yeah. A lot of stuff. So whatever you want, oh, I need to consent to get the full power of Forbes.com.
Ooh, consent, baby, consent.
Yeah,
yes.
There we go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time to talk about the $50 steak sandwich that Hollywood is drooling over. And you ask yourself, what high-end restaurant is this $50 steak sandwich in? And the answer is it's not in a restaurant. It is out the side of a place.
Of course it is.
The famous corner of Hollywood and Vine has a new showstopper, the $50 barbecue steak sandwich that aligns perfectly with the stars on the Walk of Fame. Chef Adam Perry Lang's hole-in-the-wall takeout window opened last week alongside his new APL Steakhouse. And to quote one happy customer, meat sweats never felt so good.
Well, get the fuck out of here. I want to punch that person in the face.
So. There is an what we're looking at right now is an overpriced chili dog.
How much is the chili dog?
I don't know off the top of my head.
$6. That's not bad. Or $12.
It's $6 for the chili dog. It's a glorified hot dog stand. It's located in a 62 square foot box of a kitchen that once housed a single chair barber shop.
oh, that's too bad. That makes me sad.
It is, in fact, steakhouse quality meat done as fast food. The window gives tourists and locals a chance to sample Lang's master grill skills without the big deal experience of dining at the Temple of Dry Aged Beef next door. Jimmy Kimmel is actually a partner with Adam Perry Lang. That's how I've heard the name before. Window service is only available during the day, though, and the menu is mostly hot dogs. Of course, they're not mere dogs. The $6 double beef chili dog is topped with hand-cut prime beef chuck chili. The $12 dry-aged chili dog comes with sweet white onions, cheddar cheese, and pickled jalapenos. There's also a $9 house-cured smoked beef sandwich. So you don't have to spend $50.
Oh, that sounds good, though. I mean, like, see, like, they always lead with the thing that makes you like, those liberals are going to like that.
still, it's the party-sized barbecue steak extravaganza, officially called the Serious Barbecue Sandwich, that has people slobbering like basset hounds. Lang spared neither braising time nor calories with it. He piles more than a pound of pit-cooked prime New York strip onto crunchy Texas toast, crams it with pickles, sweet onions, and horseradish. His staff wraps the finished product in butcher paper and presents it like a Japanese wedding gift in a beautiful, neatly tied APL cloth. So that has to cost something. It's apparently really satisfying, partly because eating tends to be a communal experience. You simply cannot keep it all to yourself. At the lunch that this writer did, 8 people shared one Serious Barbecue sandwich. So that's really like $5 a person.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it that way. Of course, they could all just be skinny liberals, so you don't know.
could be.
At a leather banquet inside the restaurant, the server distributed what Lang calls his limited edition felony knives, which the chef forged himself for the steakhouse, and which incur a $950 fee if you steal one accidentally. They're gorgeous knives and perfect for slicing delectable triangles off the mega meat. A side of house-cured pickles adds the right salty snap, and Mexican Coke finishes things off with fizzy sweetness. So that's quite something. $50. Hey, 8 people. There are 8 of us here. We're all going to get the one sandwich. We're just going to split it. Can we get a Mexican Coke with 8 straws? Oh, no straws. I'm sorry. Just pass the bottle around.
Just pass the bottle around.
Can we get a rag to wipe the top of the bottle because we're germaphobes?
Yes.
What do I do with it? Would you spend $50 for a steak sandwich, Cream?
No.
Jason?
I might. I might do it like if EJ and I were...
The last 2 men on earth?
No. If we were like, that's something
you'd
that,
make love and then order the $50 steak sandwich.
Yeah. That's definitely something you want to spend some time with, you know, and share with somebody you love.
if Chris wouldn't find out.
No, Chris and I are fine with that.
Oh, Chris is fine with you and EJ?
Or anyone.
Well, he came first.
Yeah. We kind of had to know each other.
Like. Literally. I don't know if you know this or not, but a dealer has complained that, in fact, selling meth is hard work. Hard work selling the meth. I mean, would you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
I totally would believe that, because I know that there is a lot that goes into selling drugs.
There is.
An accused drug dealer who allegedly paid her rent in narcotics lamented to police upon her arrest that, quote, selling methamphetamine is hard work. Illinois cops charged that Lindsay Lowry was dealing from a garage of a home in a village about 10 miles east of St. Louis. The 33-year-old is facing 3 felony narcotics counts. Now, according to investigators, she was allowed to live in the Swansea residence in exchange for meth that she provided to a woman who lived there with her husband and her children. The homeowner, Allison Yates, was charged with letting drugs be sold from her property. In a post-arrest interview earlier this month, Lowry reportedly admitted that she gave Yates meth to cover her rent bill. As first reported in the Belleville News-Democrat, while speaking with police, Lowry also remarked on the difficulty of peddling America's favorite illegal stimulant. She stated that selling methamphetamine is hard work. That was in a search warrant affidavit. She's locked up in St. Clair County Jail on a $100,000 bond, scheduled for an October 1st court status conference.
I guess she just needs a leverage job, like, you know, stitches.
Maybe it is easier selling blow.
Oh, maybe it is. You're
maybe
right.
Methamphetamine is hard, but selling blow is easy.
Ah, that makes sense.
That explains why. Well, you know.
I mean, it's much more like you pay a lot of money for coke.
Sure.
And it's like, There's affluent people are buying it.
You know, I wonder, what is the profit margin on blow?
Oh.
It is
half.
Oh, only a 50%. So 100% markup on blow. Jewelry is 300% markup, but blow only 100.
Depends.
Okay.
The really pure stuff is going to be, you know, expensive.
Sure.
But then what people do is they step on it. As anybody knows, it's watched Blow.
The movie, yes, with Johnny Depp.
And then you get a step on it, you know, so then that's how you stretch it and make a little bit more money. But generally, just like once you get it here, yeah. Anyhow, I'm sure it's like anything, you know, that's on the black market.
Do you have a spread? This is what I'm always wondering. Would you, as a blow dealer, would you have like a spreadsheet that would go with your profitability, and you have to write off your other stuff like baby formula?
No, like, you just know how much you need to. You just need to know the net you got to get for this. Like, you're like, all right, I got this kilo.
Sure.
For $500.
Now I've got to learn the metric system.
And now I need to turn it into this much, so I need to charge this much in order to get this. I mean, it's simple mathematics.
Oh, sure.
It's funny because, like, dealers, they're generally pretty, really, really good with math and the metric system.
Right? Like, so pay attention. Hey, kids, the other kid at school who's really good at math and the metric system, if they're not from another country, they're probably dealing drugs, or their dad is.
Or somebody's, if somebody, you just have to ask also your applicants. You can ask your applicants, you know, questions about the metric system to see, like, you know.
Sure.
If they get the answer too quickly.
Yeah. If they know how many grams in a pound, like, right off the bat,
yeah.
You're like, I'm going to have you take a piss test.
Yeah. Or thank you, and you'll be hearing from us.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this looks great. Look, a lot of other people to talk to. A lot of other people to talk to. And we will, of course, be in touch with you.
Florida, land of enchantment and crazy shit. This is Florida Corner.
As arrest loomed, a Florida man decided to channel his inner Michael Scott.
Ruh-roh.
you know, from The Office. As he faced arrest, the Florida man took the opportunity to do just that. According to an arrest affidavit, a sheriff's deputy pulled over a car driven by Brandon McComas, who's 31, around 9:20 p.m. after noticing the vehicle did not have a tag light. That's how they get you all the time. Just like they got Al Capone for tax evasion. They get you not for the drugs, but for the taillight being out. Always. It's always something like that. So pay attention to your tags if you're going to be doing illegal stuff in Florida. All right. Sorry. Approaching McComas' car on Vero Beach Street, the cop spotted the driver attempting to conceal a large bulge in his left front pocket with his arm. Deputy Scott Prouty then asked McComas to exit the car. While conducting a pat-down of McComas, the deputy asked about the long cylindrical object in his pants. McComas replied, "That's what she said." The deputy subsequently handcuffed him and confiscated a cylindrical case containing marijuana and a glass pipe. Another pipe was also found in the car. He was issued a tag light and pot possession citation. Those are separate, not together. He was released from jail after posting $500 bond. His rap sheet includes prior collars for disorderly conduct, domestic battery, disorderly intoxication. Oh, and like Stitches, cocaine trafficking.
Hey.
He likes selling blow. He spent 3 years in state prison on that last count.
Oh, so he does not like selling blow anymore.
Well, he did until he got caught selling blow. That's when selling blow goes wrong. Hmm. Oh, dang it. I accidentally closed the other Florida story. Let me get it for you here. It's important that you see this one, guys. Headline... This is from United Press International. Badly damaged pickup truck drives on Florida road.
Wow.
This is from last Friday, guys. A driver actually pulled over to capture video of a man driving a pickup so badly damaged that the door does not close. Take a look at this full screen. Let it roll through here. It's from Viral Hog, by the way. It'll play. There's no audio, by the way.
Of course not.
But that's fine. There he goes. Look at that fucking thing.
Wow.
It looks like a boulder fell, like, right behind the driver's seat. And it goes...
And there's somebody in the truck, too.
Well, there's somebody driving, and there was someone in the passenger seat. Or maybe the person in the passenger seat's the one driving.
No,
somebody with their arm out the window.
Right, but I don't believe... I think that is also... I can't get it to go full screen like that. I believe it's the person driving is actually sitting on the passenger side. Because the roof is crushed on the driver's side.
It's quite possible.
So, welcome to Florida. That's Florida Corner. And I think it's important that we get to this from far away from Florida, British Columbia, Canada, where women are fighting for the right to be braless on the job. There she is. The Burn Your Bra movement is back, this time ignited by young women shunning the undergarment not for political reasons, but in the name of comfort. However, some braless women feel discomfort when managers mandate they must wear one in the workplace, a rule that could be deemed discriminatory because it only applies to one gender. Kate Gosek says it's unnecessary. She works as a cook at McDonald's in Selkirk, Manitoba. She's 19, and she says several managers recently harassed her about not wearing a bra, including one who prodded her shoulder in search of one. She told me that I should put on a bra because... McDonald's. We're a polite restaurant. And no one needs to see that.
Okay. So we didn't do the grievances, but I'm going to say this.
Okay.
Okay. Because it pertains to this, and then it pertains to Aretha Franklin's funeral.
Oh, okay. You got a grievance about Aretha's funeral? I think I know where it's going, but go on.
Okay, so, and this is not me condoning the preacher who felt Ariana Grande up. This is not, that's not what this is.
There's a lot of preamble to your statement. Go on.
But white people, if you are going to participate in black shit, learn the culture.
Are you talking about the bra? Are you just talking about Aretha's?
I'm talking about Aretha.
Oh, okay, I want to make sure I'm not confused here.
And then I'm going to tie it into the bra in a minute.
Oh, good.
I'm talking about Aretha. Do not bring your ass to a black funeral in a fucking strapless dress and a short-ass miniskirt. That is not how we do business. I don't give a fuck what you do at your funerals. I know y'all go to fucking church in tennis shoes and shorts and shit. I don't give a fuck about that. When you come to a black funeral, show some fucking respect. Come dressed fucking appropriately.
She was dressed for, like, the VMAs.
Yeah. Come dressed fucking appropriately. That is not how we do business. That's not how we get down. So if you want to come and you want to participate, cool. Just make sure you come appropriate. And this is the same shit. You have a job. Your job has a dress code. Come dress fucking appropriate for work. If you don't want to look, look, you don't have to work at McDonald's. You can get a job some fucking where else. If you don't want to abide by what their dress code is, simple.
How so? What part of her dress code is she not wearing?
The bra part.
That's not part of your dress code. I'm sorry, you're not going to be able.
Is dress appropriately for work?
Yeah, dress appropriately. Come on, man. She's wearing a shirt. You can't see her nipples through the shirt. Like,
yes, apparently you could, because the women were the ones that complained about it. It wasn't the men that complained about it. It was the women. People,
like, men are never going to be the ones that complain about that. With the braless 19-year-old?
No, exactly.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to. There's no way. If a woman doesn't want to wear a bra, then you can't tell her she has to wear a bra, dude.
Don't come to fucking work.
That's ridiculous.
Why is that ridiculous?
Why can't we deal with, like, why can't you deal with, like, a woman not wearing a bra at work? Like, I'm sorry. Like,
so,
if we were
you should be able to go to work dressed like that?
That's a completely different argument, different situation.
What's the different argument?
Because I'm dressed in shorts and a t-shirt. She wasn't dressed in shorts. She was dressed in her uniform. Did they give her a bra at work? Was that part of her uniform that they gave her?
Does your boss give you a uniform at work?
He doesn't know if I wear fucking underwear. I don't have to wear underwear if I go to work. If I want to go to work without my underwear, my boss can't say shit to me. Like, he can't. Your boss can't say shit to you if you don't wear your underwear. So why does it matter if a woman wears her underwear?
Actually, hold on. Jason, if you show up in tight pants and your boss can see the head of your penis, you're getting pulled into an office and they're going to talk to you.
Exactly.
That's exactly
what's going to happen. If I show up at some woman's house with no drawers on and she can see my dick out of my pants, she is going to call my company and complain. This is what's going to happen. I don't know what look, the world has fucking rules. There are rules in the world. There was a lady who's a CEO from one of the companies. She said it's very simple to avoid discrimination. Come to work dressed appropriately. Period. That's not infringing on anybody's rights or rules. If you want a fucking job, you want to work, you come to work fucking dressed appropriately. I got a friend who used to clean cars. He used to do the detailed cars, and then his wife wanted a house. He had dreadlocks down to his mid-back. And his wife said, okay, we need a house. Like, we need to do some things. You know what the fuck he did? He cut his fucking dreadlocks off so he'd get a fucking job, so that they could move forward in what his wife wanted. What he wanted. That's what he did to conform so that he could get a job, because that's what he needed to do to be able to get a job to help his wife get a house. That's being a fucking grown up and living in the real world. And all this bullshit about with the millennials and people, you can just do what the fuck you want to. No, that's not how the fucking world works.
If there's a difference between saying you need to go home and put on a bra, and a difference between saying you need to wear an undershirt. All right, if it's part of your uniform that you have to wear an undershirt, then
go be it, and you have to wear an undershirt. Because that makes sense. That makes sense. Jason, and especially wearing a button-up shirt.
I managed a spot with 19 women. Guess what? If you came to work with your titties hanging out, guess what I did? I sent your ass home to put something on.
But her titties, I'm sure, aren't... There's no way her titties were hanging out. Like, there's the uniform at McDonald's does not allow your titties to hang out. They wear a polo shirt.
If they wanted to wear something that was too short, I sent them home. If they wanted to wear something that was not appropriate for the business that we were in, they had to either go to their car and get something out or get something from one of the other girls. They had, and look, that's not about me. That's about the customers. Because I'm pretty sure that there were women, and I'm not men, women who complained about her nipples being hard and saying, hey, I don't want my kids to see that, or I don't want that around my husband.
But what's the matter with us where that's even a fucking issue in the first place, man? Like, there should be no... Like, my daughter loves my wife's nipples, like, more than anything else.
And of
loves
course my, she my, does.
My, yeah. Because
that's where her food came
right,
from.
Right, but at some point, we've made boobs something that people shouldn't see and shouldn't be part of, and that it's a thing that...
It's like, a thing called hormones.
Yeah.
14, 15, guess what happens, Jason? Hormones kick in. Guess what? When you get boobs and you get a big ass, that means that you are fertile. That means you are ready for conception. That's what nature said. We didn't make the shit up. Society didn't make it up. Nature made that
right.
fucking
and
rule.
If we just went by our base reactions on everything and just foraged and hunted and did all that type of stuff and just lived like the animals that you're saying that we are, I mean, then I guess that would make sense. But we're not. We've tried to be civilized. We've tried to grow.
We tried to be civilized by saying, hey, you have to dress appropriately. You have to act accordingly.
I think that it's part of a puritanical, like, this of, like, the country that we're living in. And that's kind of, I mean, hey, I don't know. I don't.
Go back to Europe.
By the way, this is happening in Canada. Yes. Just for the record.
Yes.
It's in Canada. Now, here's where she may have a point. It is gender specific, but, and this doesn't play in McDonald's, but how many workplaces is it okay for women to wear skirts and open-toed shoes, but the guys cannot wear shorts and flip-flops?
Oh, a lot.
Is that okay? Go ahead and argue against your last point, Jason, because that's gender-specific discrimination. Go on.
I think it's shitty. I think it's shitty.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. So, I mean... But
so, wait. Oh, so I have to shave. So, is that gender-specific?
Yeah, the Yankees make dudes shave.
Yeah, so
I don't know how they get away with that.
That gender-specific... So that shouldn't be.
No, it may not be.
Yeah,
it may not. That may not be.
In some cases, it is. But you know, should that not be allowed?
All I'm saying is, when you're looking at that type, like, there's a lot of focus on a woman's breast and whether or not she should be wearing underwear, and that's ridiculous. I think I don't know.
There's not a lot of focus on it. You dress a look. If she's in the strip club and she don't have a bra, nobody give a fuck.
If that's what her uniform is right there, and she's not wearing, I don't know, man. It's not a.
That's a different girl. This is the first one we don't actually see.
If she's not wearing a bra, the thing is like, I know women that don't wear bras on a regular basis, and they wear some type of tight shirt or something that's similar to a sports bra, but it's not
sure.
a traditional bra.
Okay.
And it's very possible that that's what that woman had on, but she wasn't wearing a traditional bra.
Okay. I mean, here's the deal. Okay, she cannot wear a bra, but she can't go to HR on me about sexual harassment for looking at her nipples being hard.
I don't think that's how it works, but okay.
Look, I know that's not how it works, but that's what I'm saying.
I'm going to keep an eye on these nipples and let you know how it all develops in Canada.
Because we used to have a girl that I worked in a construction company that used to wear... She wore a bra, but it was like a really thin bra. And every time you saw her...
Okay.
There.
So, they're actually calling this a human rights issue in Canada. That's where this is going.
And this is where you start to lose people.
if they simply require that female employees wear a bra, but then they have don't have a similar policy requirement for males, and they really can't justify that, then there's a risk that their policy is going to be deemed discriminatory. There was an Ontario Human Rights Commission, which, following a CBC News Marketplace investigation, called for an end to sexist dress codes such as high heels and short skirts, which apply only to female staff. They're basically saying that sexual harassment and gender-based dress codes are off the menu and they're no longer being tolerated.
Again, you have a workplace. You have options. You don't have a right to a specific job. You don't. Yep. If you don't want to, well, because, and the other part of that is, men aren't coming to work with the junk out.
Well, no. Some of them.
Most men.
Most men aren't. And if they are, they're probably gay.
or they've got luxurious chest hair like chest Jason, hair like and Jason I. And,
yeah. Yeah, but most men aren't coming to work with their junk out.
By the way, the McDonald's dress code says nothing about wearing a bra.
Yeah.
But it's an expectation.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You can't just do what the fuck you want to do all the time.
I will. Now, I'm not going to take sides in this because I'm all for the titties. But I will say this. If there's a danger of them catching on fire on the line, then I think something has to be done.
That's
all I'm saying.
Yeah.
If it's a safety issue, then wrangle them.
Yes.
Wrangle your bits. That all just I'm writing that in. When I start my own company, it's just going to say wrangle your bits.
Yes.
That's my company policy. Wrangle your bits.
Stop trying to pretend like men and women are the same. We're not.
I'm not trying to say that. I'm also saying that we shouldn't have to tell women to like you have to wear a bra. If a woman doesn't
They should
wanna,
just fucking know.
I'm sure the liberals love that. Liberals love that one.
They should just know. And by the way, I'm all for you being a freak, ladies. But you really should wear underwear, too. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
What you said, you look, on your free time, you can do what the fuck you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to wear a dress. I have a dress code for work. Everybody I know that has a real job has a fucking dress code. It's just simple. It's just simple.
Well,
I mean, it's not as simple as you're saying, because if your dress code says you got to wear a bra, it doesn't say that.
Huh? But it may be something very, for lack of a better term, cryptic about dressing appropriately for work that's open to supervisors' interpretation.
Yes.
You don't necessarily cover that in the interview.
I've managed and I've worked in retail stores.
Sure.
And I understand and I get what both of you are saying, like what you're saying, Kareem, all right? But I'm not ever going to tell a woman that she needs to put a bra on, because that's not my business. Like, if she's wearing a Best Buy uniform that is neatly ironed and her pants are the way they're supposed to be, which is in the handbook, and it looks like she might or might not be. Why am I even focusing that much on her tits in the first place, man? I shouldn't be looking at her tits that much. And if I am, then there's an issue that I might have myself where I'm not seeing enough titties or I'm not touching enough titties.
There's an issue called hormones.
Right, but you got to be able to set your hormones aside, dude. Like, that's part of being a.
Dude.
So I want to hold on. Before he goes any further, I need to address this. Here's what I want to have happen. Because I know you're going to have that, you're going to see something and be like, oh. And then you're going to say to yourself, I must not be seeing enough, touching enough, or playing with enough titties. I need you to go home to your wife and let her know that you were distracted by another woman's chest. And so clearly you are not seeing, playing with, or fondling enough titties, and that she needs to whip them out so that you can.
How's this?
That's what you just said, because I'm pretty sure that you're going to see a pair of titties somewhere and you're going to be looking at them.
Yeah, you're not going to be like,
no, where I'm looking at, a, I'm, We're not talking about some fucking chick. We're talking about a coworker that's coming to work without a bra. Like, it's a coworker. You shouldn't be sexualizing
him
in the first place.
If a coworker, if one of your coworkers comes to work without a bra on, you're looking at her nipples.
This is what happens. You do that. You do that
if
thing.
If they're not looking at the ground, you're looking
at
them.
The nipples. Yes.
You look at them for a second, and then you look away, and you realize that.
So do you tell, because we do this with straight people. Do you tell gay men that they're not supposed to look at non-gay men in a sexual way?
No. Why not? I mean, why am I talking about their sex life or telling them what to do in the first place? I don't.
But you just told me as a straight man that I'm not supposed to look at a woman in a sexual way.
I'm saying that you should. You should not be fetishizing or, like, thinking in a sexual way about your coworkers, because that's not professional, man. Like, you're supposed to be trying to push that
but
down.
But coming to work, like, but coming to work without a bra is professional?
That's something I should be worried about, man. That's not.
So what Jason said is if you see her titties and you get a boner, you need to push it down. Just like you did when you were in high school.
Just push it down. I know it's hard, Kareem. I know it's hard. And it goes against millions of years of evolution. But I think we're at a point where if a woman goes to work without a bra on, that you should be able to refrain from having sexual thoughts and having it affect your day.
Dude,
like,
you know what you have to do.
Oh, wait.
Just look away.
Dude, I used to see titties every day at work. Guess what? Never went away. Yes, the urge to look at them never went away.
When you're dealing with women, sometimes that are beautiful and have big breasts, all right,
or even unattractive women with great tits,
you just look them in the eye, and you talk to them, and you give them the attention that you would give to your grandma.
Wait.
I looked away. Still, they were still there. Didn't you? Did it look? I wasn't talking to him with my head in their boobs.
Yeah, but you learned to. It's cool, man. We're definitely not on the same page on this. Like, I'm not gonna. I don't think it's my place to tell a woman to wear a bra, and I don't think that it's any other man's place to tell a woman to wear
if you can't see
her nipples. I'm not saying the outline of them, and I'm not saying like the puffiness of them. I'm not saying if you can't see the dark areolas coming through her shirt. Then it doesn't fucking matter, because I know plenty of women that have been wearing bras, and you can still see their nipples through it. So that's not a good argument.
She did not wear a good enough bra.
But see, she's wearing a bra.
And we didn't even look. The people that were telling her to put on a bra weren't even men.
No, we happened to hear the part of the article where it was the woman that confronted her, because the man can't confront her because of sexual harassment things. So they have to talk. The other women.
You just
managers,
made my other point.
What? The men are talking to the other women managers and telling
them, or the man can't say anything to her. Jason, a woman complained about that.
Right. Probably after a man complained
to her. No,
men are not complaining
about
that.
Men are not complaining about that. Look, I worked in a spa. 90% of my clients were women. I managed a spa. 90% of my clients were the people that came in there were women. Guess who didn't want to see their titties? Women.
The guys that came in were not complaining.
Guys were like complaining. Guess who was talking about shirts or skirts too short? Women, not men.
Men are not complaining about
that. Men are not complaining about that. They were women.
We're just going to have to move on with it. I mean, it was great fun and all, but we have to get done with the show.
Let's leave the hustle and bustle for small town news.
It's time for the palate cleanser that is Speak Out. The people in Plattsburgh, New York have issues, and they have called or emailed the paper to let everybody know. Is it at all possible for a single media organization in the state to at least pretend to cover the Republican gubernatorial candidate and not simply rubber stamp Governor Cuomo's re-election bid? I'd also wager this person watches one station and maybe reads one paper. And doesn't read the whole thing. Hey, Casella's Open House was a wonderful opportunity to tour the facility. A narrated bus tour of the facility, including the regeneration plant, games, lunch, and examples of products manufactured from the recycled material. They did a great job. I had no idea how complex the entire operation is and how beneficial it is to our community. You should all plan to attend next year if you can. Time well spent. Thanks, Casella. By the way, that's Casella Waste Management.
Nice.
Kareem's just added a photo. Hey, I can relate to the young lady in the newspaper about having handicap access to stores and restaurants. We recently visited a local site that also holds weddings. If you're in a wheelchair, you are not welcome there. It's all lawn for the wedding function that wheelchairs do not do well on. You cannot access the main bar restaurant area. No ramp! And the bathrooms in the banquet area cannot be accessed by wheelchair. Isn't it considered illegal this day and age? I felt degraded and was treated as such. Actually, yes. Yes, it is. If you are open to the public, you are beholden to manage to come up to Americans with Disabilities Act standards.
I'm sure that the Jeff Sessions-led DOJ is going to be right on top of that.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I really don't know because, you know. I just know if you're open to the public, you're supposed to.
You are supposed to.
To be in line with ADA rules and guidelines. Oh, and Kareem's shared a link now. If you're wondering what Kareem does during the show, he shares photos and links. As I see the new report about horrible abuse by priests, and I do understand it's a small number of the total, I also reflect on how having female priests would help the church in so many ways. Okay, I'm going to need you, and I didn't want to talk much about this because it's really depressing. There is a BuzzFeed news story about an orphanage in Vermont that was run by the Catholic Church. And the horror stories of abuse by the nuns are every bit as disturbing as the stuff you hear about from priests.
Yeah.
So don't get that look. It would bring the equality we all know Jesus would want and eliminate the problems created by not having enough priests. And now how often do you see a woman arrested as a pedophile? Well, a lot more now lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Pope should join most other religions in elevating women to this leadership position.
Well, they kind of are already in their own sect of it.
It's not close to equal.
No.
But when you insist on people being celibate, it's not going to work out. Now, while not everyone is going to rape children, some are simply going to violate their vows with consenting adults. Not a good idea. And finally, when is the hierarchy of the Catholic Church going to acknowledge that God created all beings to be sexual? The Church's restrictions on their clergy prohibiting marriage and other relationships are unnatural and punitive. While in no way justifying the sexual abuse that priests have committed, I don't believe this would be an issue if these men were allowed normal lives. Other religious denominations who allow their clergy to marry apparently do not encounter this sad state of affairs.
I've heard about it with the Jehovah's Witnesses.
It's going to happen anywhere.
And LDSs.
Yeah, it's going to happen anywhere where you get a place where an adult has free reign over a large group of kids unsupervised.
Yeah.
It's
one of those things of what do you do? Who are you if nobody's watching?
Exactly. Which means more people need to be watching.
Yeah.
So, Waste Management and the Catholics. There you go. That's what's going on in Plattsburgh, New York. And, I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree about women and their bras.
I just want to see more titties.
Kareem's done with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I don't have a problem with seeing them. I'm just not going to go to fucking HR for them.
And with that, we will see you next time. Hot takes on Colin Kaepernick and Nike and people burning their shit. See you on Friday.